This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the November 6, 2024 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. This meeting is also being made available via live teleconference for public access. Dal Langasamy, Assistant Director of Information Technology, will provide information on this combined in-person and telephonic meeting.
Thank you, Carol. Good morning. This is Dal Langasamy, Assistant Director of IT at Rhode Island Housing. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on the Rhode Island Housing website within 3 to 5 business days after the meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-429-1430. Thank you.
Thank you, Val. Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel. Members of the public can visit our housing website to view this morning's agenda and information and documents on each of the actions being taken. If the teleconference portion of the meeting is interrupted for any reason, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Committee Chairman Kevin Orth will preside at this morning's meeting. Directors, staff, please do state your name prior to speaking each and every time for the benefit of those listening in by teleconference. Now I will turn it over to the committee chair to call the meeting to order.
It's now 9:36, and I call the credit committee meeting to order. And Carol, would you please take attendance?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Designee Weber.
Present.
Commissioner Orr.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Cabral.
Here.
There you go.
Great, thank you. Turn to the first agenda item, which is approval of minutes of the credit committee meeting held on September 11th, 2024. I have a motion for this item.
So moved.
Second, Rebecca.
Second, great. Thank you so much. Any comments or questions, additions, changes?
Nope. No.
Okay. Would you please take a vote on this one?
All those in favor of approving the minutes of the credit committee meeting held on September 11th, 2024, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have a unanimous vote, and the motion is approved. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. At the request of staff, we're going to be pulling agenda item number 2 to work through a couple issues there. And hopefully have that resolved maybe possibly before the board for action at the upcoming board meeting. Okay. And so we'll now move on to item number 3, which is recommendation for approval of transfer of physical assets and prepayment for Williams Woods Apartments located in Providence. And
I will see.
You got
yes.
Thank you.
This is Dean Harrison. This RFA is an administrative action required under our general rules governing multifamily loan programs. This request for action is to approve the sale of the William Woods apartments, which will involve transferring the ownership and prepaying the existing first mortgage and a targeted loan. Williams Woods is a 65-unit affordable housing development located in Providence. The current ownership of the development is Williams Woods Limited Partnership. The current general partner of the owner is Williams Woods Wynn Limited Partners, which holds a 0.001% interest in the partnership. The owner intends to sell the development to Williams Woods Apartments LLC, a California limited liability company. The buyer, the principal of the buyers are Robert Budman, Jake Walker, Patrick Leach, and who are all affiliate of Boulevard Capital, BLVD Capital. The buyer will pay the sum of approximately $8 million to purchase the development and will finance the acquisition with a new first mortgage from Fannie Mae issued by JLL Real Estate Capital, LLC, in the approximate amount of $6,592,000 and an estimated $2 million in cash. Owner is proposing to use approximately $3,100,000 to repay the loans in full. Rhode Island Housing has determined there's a prepayment penalty associated with the first mortgage loan payoff in the approximate amount of $317,985. The buyer will assume all other existing obligations ensuring the development, including the affordable restrictions. Wynn Residential is the current property manager for the development and will remain as the property manager. So we ask approval for the prepayment of the existing first mortgage and the transfer of the properties for Williams Woods.
Great. Thank you very much.
Can I
have a motion for this one, please?
So moved.
Sorry. Okay, great.
I have a quick question. Sure. Sorry, just because I'm new to this.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Dean, Rebecca.
Hi, how are you?
Question about the penalty.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just, I think the formality is we introduce the agenda item and then we can
understood.
Ask questions.
Understood.
So, right on that one? Yeah.
Yes.
So can I have this? Hi, Stefan. So I'd just like to add for the moment that Stefan has joined the meeting. And we'll do a second from Rebecca.
Second, you got it.
And you're first with questions.
Oh, thank you. So Rebecca, again, now following protocol. With respect to the penalty, is it a percentage of the total value of the mortgage? What is the formula for
it? It's a calculation that is generated out of finance, which includes pretty much a loss of income that would receive going forward from the loan.
Okay, understood. And so that's a fairly typical
convention. Yeah.
And this is not an extraordinary sum relative to that. And it goes back to the mortgage finance entity.
It goes back to what?
Comes back.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Good, thank you.
Sorry, I had a question. I had a question. The targeted loan, I assume that would include any accrued interest on that as well.
Yes.
Any other questions or comments? Corey, please take a vote.
Of course. All those in favor of recommending approval of a transfer of physical assets and prepayment for Williams Woods Apartments located in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. It's 4 affirmative votes. The motion is approved.
Thank you. I will now move on to the last agenda item, which is a recommendation for approval of transfer of physical assets for Deerfield Commons Apartments located in North Smithfield.
I think you're presenting again.
Again, all right.
Yes, this is Dean Harrison. This RFA is an administrative action required under our general rules governing multifamily loan programs. This request for action is for the approval of a transfer of the limited partnership interest in Deerfield Commons Apartments in affordable housing development located in North Smithfield. The owner of the development is Deerfield Acquisition LP. The general partner of the development is Deerfield GP LLC, which holds 0% interest in the partnership. The withdrawing LP intends to transfer the property interest to 190 Deerfield Investors LLC, a Rhode Island Housing Limited Liability Company, for the sum of $78,441. Both the current general partner and the transferees are affiliated with Cathedral Development Development Group, Inc., the original developer. No new finance is currently anticipated. The transferee will assume all existing obligations in covering the development. The current property manager is Property Advisory Group, PAG. The owner and the management company are affiliate entities. No changes are with the management agent is contemplated. The development received a 99B on its most recent REACT score. And excuse me a second. We ask approval for the transfer of the property from for Deerfield Commons Apartments, located in North Smithfield. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Dean. I have a motion, please, on this one.
So moved.
Great. And a second. All right. Great. Any questions on this one? I don't think we have any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Corey, would you please?
Of course. All those in favor of recommending approval of a transfer of physical assets for Deerfield Commons Apartments in North Smithfield, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have 4 affirmative votes, and the motion is approved.
Great, thank you very much. We'll now move on to the discussion section. I'd ask staff, with not much notice, I'll preface that, to incorporate just a very brief presentation and followed by some discussion about our starter home program. As you may recall, that was, I think, one of the sub-goals within our overarching goal number one, production of more affordable housing, was to explore the feasibility of a starter home production program. So we've done a little bit so far to date, so just, again, wanted to see where we are and if we have any initial thoughts about it.
And I provided this for information. I don't have to go through this.
Sure.
This is what we presented to the governor. He had asked for information on homeownership, but I know Ian has pulled together the data that you requested.
Okay.
And we can stop there if you
want. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Let me just give you a little bit of history. It won't take very long. So we created the Homeownership Investment Fund program, which we call HIF, in 2019. We've had four rounds since then. We've allocated almost $5 million since 2019. We've assisted 63 homeownership units and of those 63, there were an additional five, so a total of 68. There were five rental units attached to several of these homeownership units. We issued a RFP in September for a new HIF round. Applications are accepted on a rolling basis. The HIF program supports homeownership units up to a maximum of 100% AMI. We also certainly encourage homeownership units for 80% AMI, so we have a couple of tiers underneath that program. We issued it in September, and to date, I don't actually think we've received any applications we know of. I've looked at the system. There are a couple in process, but they haven't been submitted yet. Simultaneously, to your point about the strategic plan, we released something called the Turnkey Program, which is, for lack of a better term, sort of a HIF-like program. Under the HIF program, we created what we thought was a relatively sort of abbreviated list of deliverables, sort of commensurate with what's being built. Under the turnkey program, we have a list of deliverables that are provided at the application stage, pretty much consistent with what the HIF program is. But if you're awarded under the turnkey program, we basically say, okay, here's your subsidy. Call us when you get a CO. You don't have to submit anything during construction. We don't have to look at your plans and specs. We presume that the community in which the property is being built is getting, that the municipality has looked at the plans. They're providing a building permit. They're going to provide a certificate of occupancy. It meets code. You give us the CO and a deed restriction, and we'll give you a check. We have actually received one application under that program so far.
For one home or?
For one unit, yeah. But again, I've also seen in the system applications in the process of being done. Under both of these programs, we are stressing readiness to proceed. You have to be able to close and start construction in 4 months. And I think what that means is applicants are sort of working on those readiness to proceed metrics so that, they own the site, they've got 100% plans, they have their construction pricing. It's pretty much a matter of moving to closing. So.
When did the turnkey program open up?
We released them both at the same time in late September. Yeah, and we had an information session in late September, and actually I believe the recording is actually still attached to the RFP, so if people wanted to see that.
Go ahead.
Oh,
please?
No, I was going to say, one of the advantages of the turnkey program for a developer is, it could be a development that's in process already, and we come in and just end up getting the deed restriction for the subsidy.
It's a little bit more flexible, and it allows developers to
I have a little gap here. I restrict it to this income that I can qualify for this and hopefully deploy money a little quicker and smoother, a lighter touch, as Ann said.
There is. Under both programs, it's the same. If you're building for an 80% home buyer, it's a maximum of $190,000. If you're building for a 100% buyer, it's $150,000.
That's the award. Was your question about the price?
No, the award. Yeah.
Right. And the purchase price is different depending on the municipality because taxes are different. You know, as interest rates go up and down, that number changes all the time. One of the requirements under both of these programs is that the applicant have worked with a monitoring agent on the purchase price so that that piece of it is already not baked in stone, because the interest rate could change between the time of application and the time of sale. But we get a sense of what the purchase price will be, so we're allocating the right number of dollars.
The applicant is, I'm sorry, I'm confused a little bit. The applicant is the builder or the
developer?
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Ian, do you want to talk a little bit about the affordability? Because I think it was really distinct from what we used to do.
Correct. Good point. So under the HIF and turnkey, unlike most of our traditional programs, which require a 30 or sometimes 40-year affordability, under the HIF program and turnkey, it's a 15-year deed restriction, with the goal that we're sort of helping to sort of create or speed up the notion of the concept of generational wealth. I also want to note that just sort of under the middle income program, we've actually funded 20 units of home ownership, and under the most recent bond, under BHRI-4, we created 17 home ownership units.
So how does that work with the deed restriction for 15 years? So let's say somebody buys a home tomorrow and they want to sell after 5 years. What happens?
It's still subject to the deed restriction.
The restriction being that it would have to be sold to another home buyer.
Right, and the deed restriction has a very specific wording and calculation about how it can be sold and to whom and for what price.
Is it possible that the price could be higher in 5 years than it was purchased for, say, tomorrow, and then that home buyer could realize that?
Yes.
Difference in the price?
Yes. I mean, if history is an indication of the past, rents, incomes go up gradually, but they go up
right.
every year. And if you're selling to an 80% buyer today, it's likely that the income level for an 80% buyer in 5 years will be higher. If interest rates are 10%, maybe that doesn't pan out. If interest rates are 2%,
right.
there would be a greater delta.
Okay. And so would they have to pay back this?
No. No, they're allowed. I mean,
so it's
the program does allow for some accrual of equity, and I think that's part of generational,
right.
building generational wealth.
But it goes away entirely at year 15. Okay.
That came about through feedback from developers saying,
right.
you know, we're hearing from our prospective tenants or prospective homebuyers that they see if you have a 30-year deed restriction, then there's no way to build that generational wealth. There's no
right.
way to build enough equity that you then take the next step even to buy a larger home if you need it or more expensive home, as the case may be. So this is a way to
right.
incentivize that.
But it really benefits that homeowner who has the house at year 14, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, and not to complicate this program because it doesn't seem like we've utilized it very much, but I don't know. That would be maybe one tweak to think about. If that's been a stumbling block at all, is that it seems like the benefits really accrue to that home buyer or homeowner at year 14 versus maybe, I don't know, maybe like the TCAP programs, if you remember that from years ago, where it just, the subsidy just burns off like 1/15th every year to year 15. So again, you're allowing for that equity build up for each homeowner throughout the period as opposed to a windfall at year 15.
Okay, good point. Thank you.
And I guess overall, is this a I like this program, but given its small size, is this something that is beneficial given the amount of time it takes to put this out there and the ongoing compliance issues related with it? Or is there some way we can use this as, I don't know, to really boost up the volume of the program, maybe by getting buy-in from municipalities or lenders or something so that we can tie it with something to get more production going?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can certainly market it to municipalities directly because obviously they're hearing from developers when they come in for their permits, when they come in for any zoning planning approvals they need, what they're planning. Because, oh, by the way, if you want to have three or four deed restricted units, this resource is available. So we will definitely make that outreach and make sure that all the town planners and folks know about it.
Right.
And now that we have Ben, Ben is doing a lot of outreach with municipalities. That's kind of his goal, right, is to become familiar with municipalities and what's happening in the cities and towns.
Okay. And just a point of clarification, the compliance is not done by us. It's done by a third-party monitoring agent who does get paid, but it's not, we're not responsible for the compliance.
And where's that cost coming from?
It comes from the, initially it comes from the developer. You know, that's part of their cost of doing business. The monitoring agent that I know who does the work often doesn't charge the next home buyer for that time. But they are allowed to. I believe that's in the deed restriction.
And do we still have the purchase price calculator?
We do.
Yes.
But, yeah, so folks can go there and they can say, well, if I sold my house today, what, you know, what would the sale price be? And so there is a tool on our website that I think is helpful.
Okay. Any other comments or questions about this?
Thank you so much for that presentation. Appreciate it. Pipeline, you want to do that real quick?
Sure. I mean, it's things are closing. We did close, kudos to the staff. They closed two deals in late October. No thanks to the syndicators who did everything they possibly could to slow the deals down, but we got them done. We've got another large tax credit deal that we're hoping will close in November, as well as three middle-income deals that are not tax credit, including Dexter Commons, which also has TOD. We are cautiously optimistic we'll close in November. And I'm pleased to say that the transactions that were awarded kind of their preliminary funds in May are sort of proceeding uneventfully, which is good. So those should come to the board for firm approval, you know, end of Q1 2025, which is what we always anticipated. We do have a couple of deals that have sort of taken longer than we thought. We're hoping a couple of them will come to the board in December, and then we'll have a couple more in January of deals that were approved in May. And we did issue our consolidated funding RFP for 2025 credits and about $10 million worth of other funding, mostly HPF, a teeny, teeny little bit of DAH, and about 1.4 of middle income, as well as some, you know, standard home and HPF. So I guess altogether it's it's about $18 million of resources.
James, did you want to update on ERA2 and trying to help the housing department?
Sure. The housing department reached out to us. They have about $15 million of ERA2 that needs to be spent before next September. So we've been working to try to stand up a few programs to get some of that out the door into qualified developments, we expect to have a program that will allow for acquisition, pre-development, and regular development construction. They are difficult to deploy in that they can only be used for units 50% AMI or below. So that's obviously a smaller sliver of our applicant pool than otherwise. We're looking at projects that we have funded but haven't closed and swapping out some funds into those that will be able to spend them quickly. But, you know, we do have, 9 months or so to get this out the door and feel comfortable about doing so before the bill comes due in September. So those should be up and running in the next week or so. And ideally we can get some, if not all, the dollars out the door.
We're looking at projects, existing projects,
right. Developments
that already have like home or housing trust fund that don't have these tight deadlines. So anywhere we can place the money, so otherwise it's going to have to be sent back.
Right.
That would be a shame.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks so much. Sounds, I wouldn't say uneventful, but no real problems.
Oh, there's always problems.
Well, there's always challenges. There are always challenges.
Many challenges. That's
insurmountable.
We are essentially problem solvers. That's pretty much what we do 8 hours a day.
All right, great. Any comments or questions? Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
So moved.
And second.
All those in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The unanimous vote. Yes. Motion's
approved. Thank you so much. It's okay. Tell me what you got. I know that's that one.
Did you get that on?
Harry.
Good.